It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 25. How are we doing this morning? Happy Memorial Day weekend. Hope you're having a great holiday weekend so far, playing lots of golf, hitting them straight. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers Championship. See the PGA Tour's biggest names June 18th through the 22nd at TPC River Highlands. Visit TravelersChampionship.com for information, and by Concert Golf Partners and its family of 38 upscale private clubs. Concert preserves the unique culture of each club and invests capital annually to enhance the member experience. Looking to sell or recapitalize your club? Discover ConcertGolfPartners.com. Well, I'm just back from Ireland. Fantastic 6 days. The weather was spectacular, dry and sunny. And as most of you know who listen to the show, Ireland is truly my favorite golf destination. And this trip was extra special because I was named the president of the Carn Golf Club International Members Association, succeeding best-selling author and golf writer Tom Coyne. And the presidency is a two-year term, and I'm just honored. Carn Golf Club is located in Western Ireland, outside of a little village called Balmullet. The dunes on the course are high and dramatic, dotting along the Atlantic Ocean. It's a very challenging layout, but as you know, you maneuver through the dunes, but the views are incredible, and it's so much fun to play. And they have grown their international golf membership to, over 250 members now. And every year around this time, they host a week devoted to the international members, you know, with different golf games every day. And then the whole wonderful week ends with a dinner. And this year, the dinner was at Mount Falcon Estate. It's about an hour's drive from Carn Golf Club. And Mount Falcon, owned by Alan Maloney, it's just a stunning manor house that was originally built in the 1800s. And it's situated on 100 acres of beautiful land. The River Moy is full of salmon. So, you know, people stay there. It's not only close to many of the top links courses nearby, like Carn and Enniscrone, Strandhill. They have access to 12 golf courses all within an hour. But, you know, people go there for salmon fishing. And they have falconry there, beautiful spa, excellent cuisine. But Mark O'Meara goes fishing there. Nick Faldo, Tiger Woods, they stay at Mount Falcon. And they go for the salmon fishing. So it's really a special place. And to get there, you just fly JFK to Shannon Airport. It's only a five-hour flight from JFK. And when we first arrived in Ireland early Monday morning, a quick trip, we drove straight to Doonbeg, Trump Ireland International. It's about a 40-minute drive from Shannon Airport. And I've been a member at Doonbeg since it opened. I used to film my sports interview cable show all throughout Ireland, showcasing the links courses in Ireland and the parkland courses, and educating, you know, American golfers that Ireland is such a great golf destination. And back in the day, even before Doonbeg opened, I interviewed Greg Norman there, who was the original designer of the golf course. And, you know, bring the camera crew over and walk the course, interviewing him about his design philosophy in the area. And it's still, that course, Doonbeg, is one of my favorites in Ireland. It's on a beautiful piece of property. And then Carn Golf Club is located about 3.5 hours northwest of Shannon Airport in a remote part of Ireland. Definitely well worth the drive. I love driving the roads in Ireland. Very scenic. And then you get up there and it's just magnificent. Fiona and Jerry and their staff give you that great Irish welcome. And I'm just thrilled to be appointed the club president of their International Members Association. So big, big shoes to fill. I mean, Tom Coyne continues to do so much to bring people to Carn and to promote Ireland. You know, he wrote that book called A Course Called Ireland. And he actually brought actor Bill Murray there. And Ed Burns even filmed part of a new movie there. It's called Finnegan's Foursome, about two brothers and their sons who traveled to Ireland to play the family annual golf outing, and then they distribute the ashes of their father. I don't know when the film's coming out, but the fact that Ed Burns brought a camera crew there, a film crew, and a lot of the shots were done right there in Carn. So can't wait to see that. But anyway, it was a great trip. We also got a round of golf in at Enniscrone, and we'll have to do a show just on Irish golf, later on this summer, because there's so much to talk about. This morning, we are going to hear about the man who founded Callaway Golf. I'm going to play a conversation I had with Nicholas Callaway, the son of the late Illy Callaway, who founded Callaway Golf. Nicholas has recently come out with a book called The Unconquerable Game, Illy Callaway on the Game of Golf and Life. And so after the 7:20 break, you will hear my conversation with Nicholas about this very interesting book about his dad and the ultra-successful company that Illy Callaway founded when he was in his 60s. And I love the fact that the book is so full of business advice and wisdom. I just loved it. And, hey, I still use the original Callaway steelhead metal woods. I do. People laugh at me when they're like, we have new technology now, but I just love them. And I do carry other brands in my bag. I have TaylorMade irons. I have Cleveland wedges. I have a Ping putter. But there's something about those original Callaway metal woods that I adore. And all these years later, I'm still using them. I've tried a bunch of other woods and more, modern versions of the brand. But I always come back to those Callaway steelhead metal woods. And remember the Big Bertha and the Great Big Bertha driver? I used to use those too. And those clubs definitely revolutionized the golf manufacturing biz. So I look forward to playing that interview with Nicholas Callaway in a few minutes. And then after the 7:40 break, we will go to Erin Hills in Wisconsin, where they're getting ready to host the U.S. Women's Open. And we'll connect with Dr. Jeff Poblarski, the Performance and Recovery Director for the USGA. Jeff and his team are all set up there, ready to welcome 156 female competitors. And we'll find out how he and his team help support their performance, their fitness, their wellness throughout the week, and what amateur golfers should be doing before and after we play. So, yes, the U.S. Women's Open is this coming week, one of five major championships for the women. Yuka Saso is the defending champion. Lexi Thompson will be there. She has not missed a U.S. Women's Open since 2007, when she was only 12 years old. She's 30 years old now. Amy Yang is 35 years old. She has also played in 19 U.S. Women's Open. Erin Hills is a beast of a course. It will be set up at 6,829 yards for the women. It will play to a par 72. I remember being there in 2017 when they hosted the men's U.S. Open. Brooks Koepka won it. It was the first of his five majors. Brooks Koepka, where are you now? It is just a very challenging golf course. So we're going to check in with Dr. Jeff after the 7:40 break. And the big news in women's golf this week is that the LPGA selected a new commissioner. His name is Craig Kesler, and he will become the 10th commissioner of the LPGA, the third commissioner in the last 5 years. Molly Marcot-Simon took the job in 2021, but then she resigned this past November. Craig Kesler was the COO at the PGA of America, and earlier in his career, he was the COO of Topgolf. He's a Harvard Business School grad. And, I've been reading up on him, and I read quotes from him saying that the LPGA stands at the intersection of world-class competition and global impact. And he said this is not just about leading a sports organization. It's about redefining what's possible. I like that. I mean, look, the sky is the limit for the LPGA. The best golfers, the best female golfers in the world, and their global impact on fans, young and old, men and women. It's a great product. And so how this new commissioner is able to promote the tour through more network TV contracts, more airtime hopefully on the network, That's going to be make the biggest difference, in addition, obviously, to bringing in top sponsors. And, you know, it's a global tour. They travel all over the world. And sometimes the schedule doesn't make a lot of sense because they're traveling, you know, from the West Coast of the United States over to Asia. There's a lot of zigzagging all over the globe. So, you know, that traveling can get really, really tough. So, anyway, we'll have to get Craig Kessler, the new LPGA commissioner, on the show and learn more about him and his plans for the LPGA. The PGA Tour is at Colonial Country Club, Fort Worth, Texas. Charles Schwab Challenge, Ben Griffin and Maddie Smed are tied for the lead at 13-under. Both players shot 68s yesterday. Ricky Fowler is 4 back at 9-under. Robert McIntyre, Nick Hardy, Ashe Bhatia, they're tied at 8-under, 5 shots back. You remember Ben Griffin. He won the Zurich Classic in New Orleans with his teammate, Andrew Novak. And Scotty Scheffler is playing. I'm impressed that Scotty's there after winning the PGA Championship last Sunday. Scotty is tied for 7th place at 7-under, carding a 664 yesterday, which was the low round of the day shared with Robert McIntyre and Lucas Glover. And Scheffler looking to become the first to win 3 straight starts since Dustin Johnson did it back in 2017. You know, Scotty won the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, and obviously the PGA Championship last week. And it says a lot about Scotty overcoming, you know, some weak play on the front nine at the PGA Championship. He only found 2 of 7 fairways on that front nine, lost his lead. He was pushed by John Rahm for a bit in the final round, but then he lit up the back nine, just making the shots when it counted the most. And he ended up winning by 5 shots. And he actually said afterwards that winning that PGA Championship title was the hardest he had to battle to win a tournament in his entire career. But he pushed through it, not having his A game, which says a lot about a player and his mental strength. You know, I can't think of any other player that has his mental strength right now in the game when it comes to closing. You know, I will say he's very impressive. And then afterwards, right before the Colonial this week, he was asked a question about LIV and the PGA Tour and the lack of any merger talks of late. And he said, in quotes, "We had a tour where we all played together, and the guys that left, it's their responsibility to bring the tours back together. Go see where they are playing this week and ask them." That's classic Scotty Scheffler. And, you know, he doesn't care, and nor he should. I mean, he's just focusing on his own game, but I don't know. That was his answer to that question. The Senior PGA Championship, they're at Congressional in Maryland, and Retief Guzin, Angel Cabrera, Jason Karen, and Philip Archer. They're all tied for the lead at 5-under, 1 shot ahead of Lee Westwood and Stuart Sink. And the LPGA Tours in Mexico at Mayakoba, beautiful Mayakoba. Jenny Bay from the U.S. has held on to her lead at 7-under. She leads by 1. A lot of rookies in the top 5 on that leaderboard as they try to finish up today. And if a rookie wins today, it will be the 3rd time this season that a rookie has won this year. All right, coming up, Nicholas Callaway, co-editor and publisher of The Unconquerable Game, Illy Callaway on the Game of Golf and Life. Nicholas is the son of the late Illy Callaway, who founded Callaway Golf. We'll hear his story when we come back. But first, let me tell you that at the Travelers Championship, you don't just see the action, you feel it. All the excitement, all the players, all 4 days with returning champions Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, and other PGA Tour greats. At nearby TPC River Highlands, it's the Northeast's only PGA Tour signature event this June 18th through the 22nd. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com.
Get the scuttlebutt on your favorite teams here on The Fan. It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to welcome in Nicholas Callaway, son of the late Eli Callaway. Eli, the founder of Callaway Golf and so much more. And Nicholas co-edited and co-published a new book titled The Unconquerable Game, My Life in Golf and Business by Eli Callaway. Hey, great to have you on the show finally, Nicholas Callaway. It's always a pleasure.
And it's great to be with you. We've known each other a long time, both on and off the links.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I've had the pleasure of not only knowing your father, but interviewing him in his Callaway Golf office in Carlsbad, California, for my show on the Golf Channel. And just a fascinating man. And he sent me the Big Bertha, then the Great Big Bertha. And I'm still using, as I mentioned, believe it or not, the Callaway Steelhead Woods. So my connection to your dad goes way back.
Yes. Well, everyone who met Eli never forgot him. And everyone has an Eli story. So I want to hear some of your Eli stories.
Well, he was just a Southern gentleman, as you know, you can read his voice from the book, and very smart and wise. And, you know, my favorite part of this book, The Unconquerable Game, My Life in Golf and Business, Eli Callaway, are the business lessons and the wisdom that he so eloquently and seemingly easily portrayed throughout the entire book. And we'll get into some of those pearls of wisdom. But talk about the process of putting this book together, because I know he started to write this memoir back in the 90s.
Yes, I think he was working on it when you interviewed him for your book, right? A Passion for Golf. I have been a publisher all my life, and he had such an amazing life that in the last years of his life, in the first glory days of Callaway Golf after they went public, and there were many business autobiographies being written at the time, Sam Walton, Lee Iacocca, The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump. And I felt that Eli was a seminal figure in 20th century American business. And of course, he transformed the golf industry. And I had the great privilege to observe him throughout my lifetime. And so I convinced him that he should sit down and write his life story, which spanned 9 decades of the 20th century. It was a unique life. And someone who's read the book, actually the founder of Whole Foods, said, you know, it's a very rare thing to transform one industry in your life, but I've never heard of anyone who transformed 3 industries. And I think that that is true. So he started it. He worked with 4 different writers in search of someone who could capture his voice. He passed away in 2001. Finally, he worked with Larry Dorman, the head golf writer of the New York Times. But when he passed away, it was in, like a jigsaw puzzle in 1,000 pieces. And it remained that way for a generation during COVID. I decided that so many of the things he accomplished, that he cared about, that he stood for, would be valuable and relevant and timely. And boy, are they. So anyone who reads or listens to the book, and we'll talk about the AI audiobook, I think we'll feel almost as if this was ripped out of today's headlines.
Well, so, I can't believe he passed away in 2001. It's just, that's a long time. And he seems to me so ever present. Callaway Golf is still such an iconic brand. But why do you think it took so long for you to decide, okay, let's finish this memoir?
We tried to get Larry to finish it. For years. And interestingly, he finally said, I can't do it. Eli was so meaningful to me and changed. He was the most important man in my life. And every time I try to finish the assignment with the editorial distance that, of course, I've been trained to preserve as a great journalist at the New York Times, he says, I can't do it. I'm overcome with the emotion of thinking of him and missing him. And we still hear this again and again. You're one of them. He had such a powerful personal and professional impact on so many people and on an industry. It's still felt today. So that's really why it just stayed there. But I inherited his personal archives during COVID, and it was tens of thousands of documents. And that made me realize, as I did a deep dive, that I had never, I learned things about him that neither I nor anyone knew. And the book is filled with surprises and discoveries, almost like a breadcrumb trail that he left behind. And when I read in those massive archives, I realized there was a great story. And Diana Duval, who was his last assistant at Callaway Golf, you may remember her. She is
I
now head
do.
of real estate at the Cabot Collection, and a significant has gone on to be a significant significant executive in the golf industry, having gotten her start with him. We decided it was time to put it together. So that led me down a detective. Became a detective story, really.
Well, your dad led an incredible life, Nicholas, as you mentioned, many lives, many careers. He had a very successful career in the textile business and the wine business before he even got into the golf business at the age of 63.
Yes, he said, I've led four lives, four careers, four wives, and each one was fascinating. And he tells all of those stories. But I just wanted to say that he left behind the impression that it was all easy and that it was all just going from success to success. But one of the great messages of the book that I think everyone will find valuable is the failures, in fact, and the risks that he took against all odds. He said that by the time he started Callaway Golf, he had experienced so much failure that he was no longer afraid of failure and that it liberated him. So it is a story of persistence. And what do you do when you fail, when you get fired, when you confront crisis, either financial, ethical, or moral in your life? And that's why it really is a book for everyone.
It really is. The lessons are incredible. He started Callaway Golf in 82. He was 63 years old. He did not need another career, another startup. He was living a good life. But I love this quote. He said, "Everything is determined by a person's attitude, how they react to an event or a situation. I don't think about my age in terms of being over the hill or ready to be put out to pasture. In fact, I don't think of age at all, except in terms of the knowledge and experience that can only be acquired with age."
Yes, indeed. And he also says in the book, I started Callaway Golf when I was 63, which astonishes everyone. But he said, I didn't think I was 63. I thought I was 36.
And I love how, he makes an analogy between starting a business and golf, saying you're either a mechanical player in golf or a feel player. I mean, he idolized the great Bobby Jones, and your dad was quite a golfer. And he said in quotes, "The feel player gets a brief overall impression of the situation, chooses their club, steps up, and just swings. He's the ultimate feel player in business." Your dad had a general sense that the golf club industry was a sleepy business in need of a wake-up call. So he said, "I went all in and took a big swing."
Well, as we know, golf, the game, is a great metaphor right? For life. And so that thought about the difference between the field player and the mechanical player applies not only to golf, but to business and to life. He was the ultimate field player in life.
Talk about when the Big Bertha first came about. There's a great story about he took you golfing and your reaction to the name.
So what people don't realize is that by the time he started Callaway Golf at 63, he had been playing golf for 60 of those 63 years. I had the experience of growing up. I learned to walk on a golf course holding my mother's and father's hands. So when he started Callaway Golf, it made perfect sense to me because he loved golf more than anything. But it was a little, a novelty company of hickory over steel shafts. But I used to go out and play with him near the headquarters of Callaway Golf. And we went to Del Mar one day. He had a big tour bag with a towel over it filled with prototypes. And he pulled this club out. It had nothing on it, but it was huge. And he said, Nikki, see this club? This is going to be the biggest selling golf club in the world a year from now, and it's going to change the game. And I've given it a name, and I want to know what you think. He was famous for playing with words and names. And I said, okay, lay it on me. And he said, I'm going to call it the Big Bertha. And I said, I think that's the worst name for a product I've ever heard. And he said, well, you're wrong. But let me tell you why you're wrong. He said, first of all, it has a great story. And he had remembered from World War II, when he was a soldier, the World War I cannon, the Big Bertha that could shoot a ball farther than anything else. And he said, it has a story behind it. And he believed in the power of that everything was storytelling. And he said, besides, remember, the product makes the name doesn't make the product. And I said, I still think it's the worst name that I've ever heard. I thought it was rather sexist. And he said, well, why don't you try it out and then tell me what you think? So I did. I stepped up. Made a really weird sound on impact, not just the fact that it was a metal head. The club head flew off the shaft, dribbled down the fairway about 20 yards farther than the ball did. And he said, well, we still got a few glueing problems, but I promise you it's going to be the biggest selling club in the world a year from now, and it's going to change the game of golf forever. And sure enough, he was right on all counts.
What a great story. And your dad predicted it would revolutionize the game. And as you said, he was right. It debuted the Big Bertha driver at the 1991 PGA Show in Orlando. And within a year, it became the best-selling golf club in the world. And
Were you
sales
there?
grew to
Were you there,
54
Anne?
million.
Were you there at that
Oh,
PGA?
yes.
Do you have any memories of
Oh, yes. In
it?
fact, your father gave me the great. I still have it. I still have it. And as I say, I still use the steelhead Callaway. And the Callaway manufacturers, the sales reps, when I play in these celebrity tournaments or these charity events, they look at me like, we do have your new technology. It's all those original clubs that I love so much. And,
Oh, terrific.
with little advertising, mostly word of mouth, it really kicked off the age of stainless steel drivers and oversized clubhouse. You can't really talk enough about the impact of the Big Bertha, what it did for the golf industry.
Well, think about it overall. There are very few products that you can name of any kind that change an entire industry and a lifestyle. And that is one example. Of course, maybe the great example of our time in America is Apple. But Ely was, after a lifetime as a New York corporate executive, made this huge leap to California at the same time as the birth of Silicon Valley, of Napa food and wine revolution, and he became a pioneering late 20th century California lifestyle brand creator with his golf clubs. It's quite
He
a
stuck
story.
to his guns from a business perspective, used mostly his instincts, Nicholas. Again, I love the wisdom about business that he shares throughout the entire book. He said in quotes, "I strongly believe that you should not have a business plan. It's too easy to get discouraged because if you realize what you're up against, you will never take the risk."
I hope that will be heartening to entrepreneurs because it is so true. And he says that raising money, even for Callaway Golf and in general in business, is the hardest thing. And if you think of someone like him who ran one of the biggest companies in the world, and if that's hard, then so this is both a manual, a how-to of business, and also an encouragement for anyone who's in business, startup, medium or giant corporation.
The book is called The Unconquerable Game, My Life in Golf and Business, Billy Callaway. Nicholas Callaway, thank you so much for joining us here on Talking Golf.
It's great to see you again and to be with you, Anne. Thank you.
All righty, you'll love the book. And Nicholas, what a great guy. Anyway, we're going to shift gears in this next segment. Coming up, we'll check in with Long Island's own Dr. Jeff Poblarski. He's at Erin Hills in Wisconsin, getting ready for the U.S. Women's Open. He's the Performance and Recovery Director for the USGA, one of seven USGA championships he's working this season. We'll get Dr. Jeff's insight on how the pros prepare physically for the grueling 4 days of intense competition of this major championship. But first, let me tell you that at the Travelers Championship, you just don't see the action. You feel it. All the excitement, all the players, all 4 days. With returning champions Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, and other PGA Tour greats at nearby TPC River Highlands, it's the Northeast's only PGA Tour signature event this June 18th through the 22nd. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees Radio, The Fan. It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Hey, welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Memorial Weekend Sunday morning. So glad you can join us. And right now we head to Erin Hills in Wisconsin, the site of the upcoming U.S. Women's Open. That is where Dr. Jeff Poblarski is, the Performance and Recovery Director for the USGA, getting ready to treat the competitors as they take on just a really challenging golf course, Erin Hills. And I remember I was there in 2017 when Erin Hills hosted the men's U.S. Open. It is a grueling test. And hey, Dr. Jeff, how's it going?
Doing great, Ann. It's 41 degrees here at Erin Hills, so it's a very brisk morning, and looking forward to a great week here at Erin Hills. It certainly is a bear of a golf course, and we were here in 2017, like you said, and just 8 years just flies, but it's going to be a great week.
Well, you've been there for a couple of days, and you're all set up. Give us a sense of what you have to bring in, all the equipment, and how all the logistics work.
Yeah, so being the performance and recovery director, we have several modalities that we offer the players. We have doctors of chiropractic, physical therapists, athletic trainers, massage therapists, Normatec compression recovery systems, hyperbaric chamber, three ice baths, an infrared sauna. We kind of have all the modalities to assist all the players and also caddies we treat at these events too.
And so what percentage, you have 156 competitors who are entered in this U.S. Women's Open, and how many of those competitors would you say take advantage of all the treatment that your team offers?
You know, on average, we see about two-thirds of the field and maybe about four-fifths of the caddies. So we're up to like about 200 players and caddies coming through treatment, so we'll be very busy during the week for sure.
And so how many people are on your team?
We have 30 people, and we have people from Canada and Texas and Pennsylvania, wherever we've had these USGA events, because this is our 47th USGA championship. wherever we have these events, we recruit in those geographic areas. So we have a tremendous following of people from around the country that are on our team. Obviously, we have people from Wisconsin, too, on our team.
Now, does this equipment go from venue to venue, or do you have to bring it in locally?
Yeah, we have two sets of equipment, and a lot of my time is actually spent in FedEx and UPS offices because we have, you know, I think it was about 25, 40-pound boxes that were delivered to Erin Hills. And then we take some of that equipment and we ship it 2 to 3 days to Oakmont, which is our next championship in Pittsburgh next week.
So for those who might not know what a hyperbaric chamber is, can you describe it and let us know, you know, the benefits of it?
Yeah, you know, you're breathing 21% oxygen right now in the air. Everybody's doing that. When we put you in a chamber, which looks like a torpedo, it's actually pretty spacious. You go in there, and what it does is it hyper-saturates your body with oxygen. The more oxygen you have in your body, the quicker that you recover. So it's a great recovery tool and a very popular modality. We're calling it the PAR team. Instead of saying performance recovery, we'll call it the PAR team, but very, very popular modality that we have.
And so will the players go in this, like, after every round?
Yeah, we have players that go in it after the round, again, cleaning up. The more oxygen in the body, the more inflammation you reduce, because inflammation doesn't like oxygen. So they do go after rounds, but they also go before rounds just to get some more oxygen up into the brain, and thoughts are a little bit better with that, and they get a little bit more clarity in their thought process with more oxygen in their body.
And so it really works. I mean, I have not tried it, but I'm going to have to try this.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's very popular in professional sports. You know, the NFL, I think there's about 400 active units that are used in the NFL. Players buy in, and actually they sleep in the chambers 7 or 8 hours of just inducing more oxygen into the body.
So how long should you stay in there?
It's a one-hour treatment.
Oh, it's 1 hour. Okay. So before and after. So give us a sense of what the pros do, you know, day to day to prepare for their day at work. I mean, and then I'd love to hear what amateur golfers should do in terms
sure.
of fitness and
yeah.
strength, et cetera.
Yeah, so again, our title is that PAR team, performance and recovery. So performance, they'll come in before the round and prep the body to go out and play. You know, an average LPGA woman's golfer, club head speed is about 101 miles per hour. You know, that's nothing to fool around with. That's like throwing a fastball 100 miles an hour or
sure.
throwing a football, you know, Tom Brady throwing a football 60 yards. It's the same mechanical forces in the body. So in our treatments, we like to prep the body, the golfer, for that movement, especially the drive. So it's about activating the body. You know, you have to activate the lower back and activate the glutes and activate the shoulder and the wrist and the mid-back. So there's a lot of activation of the body, preparing it for the game. And then afterwards, that's the recovery component. After they're walking 7, 8 miles here, because again, this is the bare of a golf course, and all that mechanical force from swinging, now we got to clean up the body, reduce the inflammation, get them recovered, which is a very popular thing now in sports. You know, 30 years ago, if I was on your show, we wouldn't be talking about recovery. Now they're saying, you know, half the time that you're playing a sport, so if you're playing around the golf for 5 hours, half of that time on a professional level, they're using recovery techniques. So it's about a two-and-a-half-hour process to recover the players.
And what's involved in that recovery?
So we're back to what we're offering, whether it's hyperbarics, whether it's the Normatec compression, whether it's chiropractic adjustments, whether it's massage therapy, you know, whether it's a stretching technique, whether it's icing people, whether it's sitting in the ice bath. So they kind of go through all of those modalities after they play.
I love that. All right. And then, you know, obviously stretching is key. I mean, even when I'm not playing golf, I stretch every morning. I would be a different person if I didn't stretch. And it's only like a 15, 20-minute stretch exercise that I do every morning. But, I mean, stretching is huge, right? And it should be done before and after.
Yes, exactly. You know, and it's a different type of stretch. And, you know, years ago, you would hold a stretch for like a minute, 30 seconds. That really throw that idea out It's all about that activation we were just talking about. You need to stretch the areas for 2 seconds and then repeat it. So if you were stretching your shoulder, you hold it for 2 seconds, 1, 2, and then you repeat it, 1, 2. So it's these fast bursts of flexibility, because the swing is 1.53 seconds, right? About 2 seconds, a little less than 2 seconds. So your stretching for golf should be about 2 seconds, but repeat the movement over and over again instead of holding it for 30 seconds or a minute. So for the viewers, think about just doing 2 second stretches, but doing it multiple times over and over.
And you do this before you play and after?
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. Before and after. Again, recovery is again is a very, very big part of performance. Because now you don't want to show up at the golf course the next day and your back is sore and your knee is sore. You're just not going to perform as well. You got to clean all of that soreness, all that inflammation out of the body, kind of be pain-free the next day, and then you're going to perform better. So especially playing 4 rounds in a row at Erin Hills, I mean, we had a caddy in yesterday. The guy just walked the course to get the measurements. He came in, he was huffing and puffing, his knees were already hurting, you know, an older caddy. And we kind of told him the story. And he's like, wow, I didn't even know this was available at these events. I said, yeah, the USGA does a great job. And not only what we're doing, we have a wellness den where the players could go in and relax. You know, we have a full gym, a 40 by 40 foot tent that we brought equipment in so the players could use weight training for strength training. You know, we have a lot of modalities. They brought in a manicurist and pedicurist for the players. You know, so a lot of different things. And I'm hearing from the players that the USGA does the best presentation for the players at their championships. And we hear that over and over again over the years.
I love that. They really do take care of the players and the caddies, which I think is just as important. And I love the fact you said there's like a Zen room where players can go in there and just you know, chill out and get their mind ready and get calm before the round.
Yeah, they're calling it the wellness den. It's actually about 50 feet or 50 yards from the performance and recovery tent. I went in there and they have nice relaxing couches and nice music and it's different types of lighting to just kind of calm you down. And I could see that being very effective, you know, trying to slow your body down when you get to that first tee so you're not really all amped up. So it's another great thing. We've never seen that at events anywhere else in the world, but the USGA did put this wellness den together.
You mentioned, Jeff, that the women have about, 101 club head speed?
Yeah. Yes, on the driver, yes.
Okay, so what would be the difference in treatment, say, with the women pros compared to the guys?
Yeah, so guys are about, you know, PGA Tour is about 121, so it's a 20-mile-an-hour difference. You know, the strength, you know, we always say this, from the waist down, guys and girls are about the same strength. That's why if you look at the Olympics on a 100-yard sprint, the times are actually very similar. But from the waist up, the females are about 40% as strong as a male. And that's a big thing to look at because what happens with the female, they try to catch up a lot because they don't have that upper body strength and they'll excessively use their wrist or their elbow and their shoulder. And then all of a sudden injuries start occurring in the upper body because of the strength differential. That's a
wow.
Big difference.
Big difference. I mean, there's a big difference, yeah. But, you know, the women are just incredible. The length that they get on their drives. When you're not working at these USGA championships, I know you run your own chiropractic facility in Amityville, you're a professor, your resume is incredible, and quickly, you are also involved with a podcast, The Ride to the Ryder Cup, with the great Frank Darby. Give me a quickie on that one. What are you doing with that?
Yeah, it's a 35-week show. It's called The Road to the Ryder Cup. It's sponsored by the Tunnel to Towers, and we're doing the A to Z of the Ryder Cup, from player interviews to media interviews to state people to politicians, you name it. We're going to talk about the Ryder Cup for the next 35 weeks.
Hey, continued success, Jeff. Have a great week at the U.S. Women's Open. Thanks for getting up early for us.
All right. Have a good day.
My thanks to Dr. Jeff Pavlarski, to Nicholas Calloway, to Rami Levy in the studio. I'm looking forward to hosting the 27th annual Anne LaGorrie Foundation Charity Golf Classic at West Hampton Country Club this week to benefit St. Jude and cancer research. And Talking Golf with Ann LaGoria is brought to you by Travelers Championship. See the PGA Tour's biggest names June 18th through the 22nd at TPC River Highlands. Visit TravelersChampionship.com for more information. And by Concert Golf Partners and its family of 38 upscale private clubs. Concert preserves the unique culture of each club and invests capital annually to enhance the member experience. Looking to sell or recapitalize your club? Discover ConcertGolfPartners.com. Hey, have a great rest of your Memorial Day holiday weekend. Be safe, be kind. Mark Melusis is up next, and I look forward to talking with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGoria. You know the-